The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good morning, everybody. This is a numbers game, Monday morning, hour number two. I'm Jared Smith in for Gil Alexander today. Kelly Bidlin, of course, with us as well. And joining us now, we're usually talking hockey, but we're going to switch gears a little bit with this gentleman. Jay Conn, co-host of The Point and the Fantasy Hockey Show on Sirius XM NHL. Follow him at JayHon4 on X. Jake, let's switch gears here because obviously hockey is not playing right now, so we can't really get any of your thoughts there. But we can get your thoughts about the Olympics. And we start with golf because I'll be honest, this is tough. And first, walk me through the format of what it's like for golf, the course, like all the course history, the format. And I know that's a big part of it. But is this more unique than, let's say, a regular tournament on a regular weekend? Or is this something that takes a little bit extra layer of handicapping to get into?
I think you almost treat it, and thanks for having me. Great to be back with you guys as well. And like you said, even no hockey, there's still plenty going on right now. You got baseball every day. We got the Olympics in full swing now. So it's a great summer, I think, to be a sports fan, especially with the soccer behind us now as well. I think, at least for me, from a handicapping perspective, I would treat this tournament sort of like the smaller field events that we see on the PGA Tour this year, except the fact that the back end of the field isn't quite what you'd see at the back end of those PGA fields, right? Where you'd get 50 or so guys that are all really good, you know, close to the top 50-ish golfers in the world. Now you're seeing some of the best golfers in the world. Obviously, the front end of the field is very strong, loaded with the top American players that are all either the favorites or close to being the favorites. But it's the back end of the field that you can kind of cut down and just say, well, these guys don't really have a shot at winning a medal or winning a gold medal specifically and actually winning this tournament outright. So there's probably 10 to 15 players off the back end that you can cut out of this. And I think you could really treat it as one of those smaller field events. So I'm going to be looking towards the middle of the pack here, guys. I'm looking at elite players that you'd get in that numbers range at a major golf tournament, for example. And I'll just throw one name at you right off the top, Hideki Matsuyama, who's hovering around 30-1. You're going to get Decky at 30-1 in most major fields, you know, especially the Masters, a tournament that he's been great at. He's obviously won at 30-1. I think for Hideki is a very fair price for the quality of player, a guy that can beat elite fields, that can go toe to toe with elite players in a final round and win and seems to step up in big events. I think getting him at 30-1 in a small field event like this, those are the types of prices we're getting them at in full field major events, that those are the types of prices that are really going to interest me for this tournament.
Yeah, Jake, and just to clear up format for everybody, it is kind of, it's normal stroke play, four rounds, so yeah. It's really, you know, if you do handicap golf week to week, there's really not much of a switch over. You're basically just got a golf tournament happening in France this week. I think those were good comps made by you for at least the odds board. I think just the odds board in general is kind of interesting to look at. Do you think you're, because there's that lack of talent on the back end, it does, I feel like I've heard a lot of people going kind of to that mid-range on the board. Is that where you think you're going to be looking at for a lot of your bets?
I think that's probably where I start my card now. I mean, obviously, guys, it'd be very easy for me to make a case for any of the top names on your board right there. The gold medal likely to go to an American player here with some of these names and the form that they have coming in. I mean, Xander Schauffele, the season that he's having right now, two majors. Obviously, Scottie Scheffler, we know he's the best player in the world as well. And Colin Morikawa is a guy that stepped up at every big event this year and has been in contention as well. So there's three Americans right there that I think should be in contention for that gold medal. But I just think when we're looking at odds, we're trying to find value. It's tough to find value in any of those numbers right now. So I think that, and I mentioned Hideki is a name I'm going to be very interested in that 30-1 range. Victor Hovland's another really interesting name to me that I still think he's an elite talent that's just having an off year. So I'm seeing him as you know, you can get as good of a price as about 25-1 on him. He's a name I might hover around for a while as well. And I don't want to completely disregard, Kelly, the bottom of the board. Obviously, there's some names you look at and go, okay, I've never even heard of this guy. I don't even know what country he's from. So I'm probably not going to bet him. But I am Canadian. I've got to get a little bit of, let's sprinkle some Canadian bias in on here.
Okay.
Nick Taylor, 150-1. Probably not for the outright, but maybe find a two medal bet or a top five bet, something like that. He's just a guy, again, I trust against big names. Ever since his win in Scottsdale this year, he has tapered off. He doesn't come in with the best form. So that's why he's down there at 150-1 and maybe not in that, you know, 65-70-1 range if he came in with some better form. But I like Nick Taylor. I think he's a guy that can find it. And if he does, I do trust him against the top players if he gets in contention in the final round.
Jake, let's move to the tennis tournament here. I actually did make a bet on Coco Gauff to win the women's tennis gold. Iga Świątek is the big favorite there. On the men's side, obviously, Carlos Alcaraz, big favorite, some other familiar names. Let's start with the women. Is Coco live? Can anyone upend Iga, who's like a $2 favorite, to win this thing?
No, I think she's very live. I actually think that's a solid bet. Now, obviously, we know how great Iga is on the dirt, and this is where she wins. I mean, she never loses. So it is tough to go up against her, but I think at this point, she's just been priced out of the range for me personally. I understand why people might want to still bet her because at this point does sort of feel like free money because she is that good. But Coco's the type of player. I think there's only a handful of players that could probably go toe-to-toe with her on clay and actually win. And Coco Gauff would certainly be one of them. So, yeah, you look at the rest of that board and, you know, Paolini is somebody I have to give a lot of credit for coming on this year, but just not someone I'm interested in backing at that number. As great of a season and as nice of a form as she comes in, I just don't see her being able to beat Iga on this surface. So I think Coco's the only name you could really go to and say, yeah, I feel pretty good about that. The rest of these names, I don't see a lot of women that could go toe to toe with her on clay. So I think Coco's a solid play at that number.
On the men's side, does it look like Alcaraz is kind of running away with this thing, or do you think there's going to be some pushback?
I think there could be some pushback. I mean, it's a difficult ask to rack this back again. And obviously there's it's a little bit of a different pressure. I think competing for a gold medal, it's hard to compare it to a Grand Slam, but it's something different, at least something that maybe he hasn't experienced. And you don't know if maybe that mentally affects him as we get deeper into the tournament. So I'm certainly not saying it's any sort of layup. And Novak Djokovic, I don't know how much we read into his matchup against Rafael Nadal this morning. Obviously, you know, years ago, we would look at that as a top end premier matchup, and Rafa's not what he used to be, and he's clearly at the end of his career now. But the fact that Novak beat him in the way that he did, maybe raises my eyebrows a little bit and says, oh, okay, maybe Joker's here to claim his gold medal as well. So as much as Alcaraz obviously deserves to be the favorite here, guys, Novak Djokovic, I think he's got a legitimate shot to take home the gold medal here.
Jay Kahn, co-host of the Point Fantasy Hockey Show on Sirius XM NHL. Jake, the rest of the Olympics, have you been interested? I mean, I know that there's no hockey at this Olympics, so unfortunately we can't get involved on the ice, but you can bet on pretty much every sport. I know tennis and golf are sports we're used to betting on, but have you invested in any of the non traditional sports as the field just gets completely opened up for us to have some fun here with this couple of week stretch in Paris?
Yeah, like you said, I think for me, especially in these early days with tennis starting right away, I'm going to gravitate towards the sports that I actually already handicap. I'm comfortable with the names. I know the athletes. So I have been betting the tennis these first couple of days, and it's been great. And we get the golf coming up this weekend as well. So I think once the tennis maybe winds down a little bit, I'll look into some of these other sports. And, you know, hey, you can go out there and try to find someone that actually knows what they're talking about with some of these sports and really get into the numbers. I do like to get in on the swimming.
Okay.
Guys. I think the swimming is one that I enjoy watching it. You know, I think you can find some value, but obviously you do get these stud athletes that end up just dominating and winning, every type of discipline. So I did watch a little bit of the swimming over the weekend, was rooting on our Canadian girl, Summer McIntosh, who took home the silver medal. So she's somebody I might get into backing. The soccer as well. I mean, again, from a Canadian perspective, it's been fascinating with the penalty to the women's soccer team getting docked.
Cheaters.
6 points for the...
Classic Canadian cheaters.
Classic Canadian.
Send them
right?
to Tim Hortons.
And then coming out and beating France the way that they did, this team kind of maybe rallying around that a little bit because this team's being punished for something that happened in the past. And I think there's a lot of athletes there that think, you know, I had nothing to do with this. I came here to compete. I came here to try to win a medal. And they've put themselves in position where they can actually qualify now through to the next round. So I think that's actually a fascinating story with everything that's gone on there.
Jake, we appreciate the time, pal. I know you're excited about hockey season. We'll let you get back to the hockey handicapping. Good luck with tennis and golf as we continue to move forward with the Olympics and swimming. Apparently, he's a big swimming. We'll have him back in a couple weeks, right, when the swimming comes in the big, right, hot and heavy. Keep that in mind there, Kelly.
They're going right now.
I have no idea. Swimming. I haven't watched much of the Olympics over the last couple of days. I've been
I feel like they swim from
losing
start
too
to
many
finish,
nerfies. They wrong. Probably do. So there's
no,
so
no,
many
it's swimming early
there.
And then track late, I believe, is the big thing.
Oh, track is the late one. Good stuff, Jake.
I like that you said you've been losing on the nerfies. It's been a tough go for the nerfies lately. But
the last week's been rough.
Stick with the process, right? If I'm to leave you with one baseball team to keep in mind here, guys, because I am a big baseball guy as well, the San Diego Padres, I think, are a team to watch out for in the outright market. If you look at their August schedule, very, very gettable. They got a couple games with the Dodgers this week. I think they're going to get aggressive here with some trades. They already have bringing in a reliever. So Padres is a future ticket I'm looking to get in on here, guys.
Padres to have the most wins in August. Maybe we'll be on the board. We're going to do that. We're going to do that a little bit later in the week as we get close to the new month, because that's a very popular show here on the program. A popular guest here on the program, Jake Hahn. We appreciate the time as always, pal.
Thanks, boys. Enjoy the Olympics and the nerfies.
Great stuff. Yes, I will have a nerfie for I have one. Of course, he joins us via the Progressive Guest Line. I do have one nerfie that I'm looking at today. It just crossed the threshold for odds where I want to play it in a good way.
Oh, okay.
All and right. I'll explain that process a little bit later in the show. There's a certain number that once we go past, I like to actually bet. I'm actually not afraid to give up a few pennies of juice because I want to see if it gets to this certain number. We'll talk about that game, and we'll talk about some breaking news in baseball on the other side, a numbers game.
The Sports Betting Network.
Breaking news. Our college football guide is getting released on Thursday. I know. It's very exciting. I wrote up two bets for the weekend on it, both plus money. I'll be honest, maybe we'll give out one of them this week. Maybe on Wednesday. Oh. Maybe on Wednesday or on Thursday. You'll be gone, but maybe on Thursday when the college football guide drops, I'll give a sneak preview because it's a fantastic resource for the upcoming college football season. Previews of 134 teams, top 25, power ratings, everything, betting systems, you name it, you got it. If you sign up now, you'll get the early bird price of $175. You can also sign up for a monthly subscription, get your first 30 days for only $19. You see everything VSiN has to up your game. Don't miss out on the preseason deals. VSiN.com/subscribe. Thank you, Jake Hahn. Great stuff. Olympic golf tournament starts Wednesday. Thursday, when does it start?
Thursday. It's really like it's kind of a normal golf week. It's kind of weird. I mean, no real huge format change, which I don't know.
And no other tournaments, right? This is the only tournament happening this week?
I think so. I mean, there's nothing else on the PGA Tour. I don't think anything else because, I mean, every other tour I would think is kind of observing this, conglomerating
all the players together.
I don't know about the format. Like, I kind of, as a golf bettor, I like the idea that they're not changing formats, right? And you're just kind of sticking to the same schedule format that we normally would. I feel like if I was just an Olympics fan, though, I'd want to see more match play with these guys going against each other.
Match play. That's why when I was asking Jake the format, I didn't know where he was going to go with that because I thought it was individual match
play. Yeah, honestly,
I
don't remember from 2016, I think was the first year that they had it down in Rio. I don't remember what the original format was.
Has it been popular, the two Olympics they've had it? Has it been an event that people have cared about? I don't really remember the 2020 one in Tokyo.
I bet Xander that tournament, so that was nice to actually have like a winning Xander ticket, but it's a good question. But I feel like I've
got a bunch of them lately.
I feel like when I keep bringing up questions about the Olympics, I'm getting the correct pushback. Where Dustin was doing this to me yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, has anybody noticed the arenas? in Paris. Like, have you watched any of the fencing or anything?
No.
It's like inside of a museum. It looks gorgeous.
Oh, that's cool.
And I was kind of freaking out about it.
I saw the beach volleyball with the Eiffel Tower behind it with the silhouette was really cool.
So yeah,
it's a pretty cool place to have an Olympics. I'm not going to lie.
Dustin did point out to me that, yes, Paris is a little bit of an upgrade from where we've been at the past
from
few
Tokyo
Olympics.
From Tokyo and Rio. And it's not a knock on those places.
No,
I just think,
at all.
I just think when I close my eyes and think of, like, a romance –
Right,
scenics.
Well,
I think of the Eiffel Tower.
And when we're talking golf.
The Arc de Triomphe.
Yeah, and when we're talking golf, yes, it's gotten far more popular. It's gotten far more popular in Japan over, you know, recently.
Golf has definitely gotten more popular.
But, like,
in Japan.
It's been
not that popular in France, frankly.
Well, it's not that popular in Brazil. But,
no.
I mean, it's been a stalwart in Europe forever. I mean,
yeah.
Since the beginning of time. So this is.
Yeah, France seems to be weird. France. Can I name a French golfer? Pavone, right?
Matthew Pavone. Yeah,
Pavone, that's the only French golfer that I think I can name.
Antoine Rosner?
I don't think I know that guy.
I think he's French.
I have no idea.
Sure.
It sounds French. I've just never heard of him before. All right. Let's follow up briefly with some baseball breaking news.
Oh, I did make two bets while we're rambling about golf.
And it's funny thing, in the break, he's like, I want to give out two bets. And we had this whole golf conversation 5 minutes in the segment. He didn't give out
so
any bet. What are you betting on?
Wednesday, I will do a more thorough handicap on the entire tournament. We do have long shots coming up this week, too. Matt West and I will be diving into the tournament for everybody at home. So we will be talking about it there. I did make a couple bets, though, yesterday. Just wanted to get in front of some number moves. Jake brought him up. Call him Morikawa. I've said it on this show before. I'm not really backing down from betting Morikawa until he wins at this point.
Yeah.
It's kind of where I'm at with him at this particular point in the season. He's been playing so well. I saw a 14 here in town, and I decided that was good enough for me. I will at least jump in 14-1. Didn't bet either one of these heavy because I want to see where, again, kind of a typical golf week. So these markets will, you know, this is kind of like a major, right? You know how with Masters odds get hung for months, right?
Yeah.
Somebody's been up for a
so
month
been
or
eating
so.
In the market for a while.
And they're going to flip on week of a little bit. So I did bet these. I didn't bet them super heavy, though. It's Morikawa 14-1. And then John Rahm, he was someone I bet him at the British Open. Liked where he was coming in with his game there. We had been waiting all year for him to finally win on LIV. He picked up a win yesterday, finally in LIV.
Nice.
LIV has been in Europe for the past now, like, month. So all those guys are kind of acclimated over there and everything. So I really like Rahm heading into the Olympics. I did bet him 12-1, and I knew that number was going to be moving after he won yesterday. So I thought it was important to get in front of that. Speaking of that, though, I would not bet him shorter than 10-1 right now. Like, I think you still got to get double digits on John Rahm, the top of the board with Scheffler, Schauffele, Rory, Colin. There are some really, really talented guys at the top of the board. I probably wouldn't go shorter than 10-1 on Rahm because keep in mind, we were betting him at 20-1 in the British Open. So, 12-1, even that felt a little chalky to me, but I will, I bet those two early, and then I'm sure we'll be adding to the card later this week. But, you know, it is the Olympics. There's only so many bets you could make.
Yeah, the only bet that I made was I put Coco Gauff 5-1 in a futures parlay.
Look at you and Ben Wilson, man. You got to fill in on this show and just the anti-Ega, just hate, the slander that has to come. It's
are you an Iga fan? Well, I know you guys talk about tennis a lot here, obviously, because of Gil.
I don't really care.
But Gil
bets her all the time, yeah.
He likes Iga.
And he's got Iga bets, yeah.
So the reason that
I do have a Coco bet with you, though, at the quarter. I bet her to win the quarter.
I feel like she's live at 5-1. She's looked great. She's only dropped like three games first two matches.
I'm somehow more invested in this, like, tennis for the Olympics than I have been in any Grand Slam.
Iga's look good, too. I mean, but Coco was like a 1,600 money line favorite today. Iga was like a 2,000 money line favorite today. These two women are going to roll probably to, like, the semis before they reach any resistance, and I hope that they're in a crash course to play in the final. That would be a really good final. Of course, the match being played at Roland Garros, clay, that is a big part of the handicap. And a great job by Jaycon breaking that down and your golf picks, too. I like the Rahm play a lot. The Rahm number makes sense if you consider the the situation he's in. I think the travel matters, the fact that they're in Europe. All right,
both golf and tennis are interesting, real quick.
They are. They are. Very interesting. It's the same sport.
Well, it's the same sport, but
same players.
Jake brings up a good point. The back end of the board, both tennis and golf are going to be this way. It's not going to be nearly as strong as it is, and I'm not saying that 70-1s go out and win all the time on the PGA Tour. Johnny Vegas did just do that yesterday. But you have, they are still all professional PGA Tour level golfers, right, that we're talking about in a PGA Tour event. When you have countries that can only send two or three golfers in these there is not nearly like as Thailand. Much talent further down the board. And that's going to apply to both tennis and golf. So something just to keep in mind as you're betting these things.
Do you find this is your first time betting the Olympics? Did you bet it in 2020? Do you remember?
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
I don't remember betting it in 2020.
Yeah, I bet. I had a Xander ticket.
That's right. You said that. Yeah. That's right.
I don't think I bet it in 2016, though. That's a good question.
I don't think gambling, it was not legal in the States unless you were in Nevada then.
I was gambling in 2016.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was gambling in 2016, too, just not legally, wink, wink. All right, the breaking news that we heard in baseball, I will get to that right now because Jeff Passan just tweeted that the Royals have acquired a new pitcher, Michael Lorenzen from the Texas Rangers. That's important for two reasons. Again, we talked about this a little bit earlier with Mark, just seeing the hand. Like, we get to see the hole cards. Usually when you're playing blackjack, you only get to see one hole card. The other one's face down. You don't know what the dealer's holding. Now we get to – they have to flip. Because the Royals, we thought they were in the race. We expected them to be buyers. The Rangers, we didn't know. We didn't know what the Rangers were going to do, right? They made all these great moves. Scherzer and all these great players won the World Series. Didn't have a great start to the year. But they were still kind of hanging around, as Teddy KGB would say. But it hasn't been a good season for Texas. Well, now we know. Now we know they're sellers. Frankly, I think this does two things for the Rangers. A, they're probably going to sell more because they have good players that probably are available. I don't know who, but I'm assuming this won't be the last move Texas makes as they kind of retool after their World Series season. But on the other side with the Royals, how legit of a contender do we think they are? Because they're telling us right now that they think they're a contender.
Yep.
I didn't love what I saw from Reagans yesterday. I think their rotation still leaves something to be desired. That's why they go out and get a Michael Lorenzen. But offensively speaking, this has been one of the most consistent best offenses in baseball all year. Bobby Witt's an MVP candidate. Salvador Perez has played like a million games, and he's one of the better – I don't think he doesn't catch anymore, I don't think, but he used to be one of the better defensive catchers in the game.
Bobby Witt Jr. still batting over .500
Bobby
this
Witt's
month?
Like, unbelievable.
Is that a
season.
Thing that happens in Major League Baseball? Like, I just caught his stats the other day. Over .500 in a month? That's incredible.
Yeah, so I'm keeping an eye on the Royals. I don't know what their prices are. If you want to pull up the baseball futures market now, I wouldn't be invested in them to win it. But if they're not plus money, if they're not like minus 150 or higher to make the playoffs, I would consider a playoff bet. Because the thing you have to consider when you're looking at this playoff market, and the playoff market's going to move a lot over the next couple days.
45-1 to win the World Series, 22-1 to win the AL.
What are they to make the playoffs? Minus 150? I would guess minus 150.
Plus 120 to make the playoffs.
That's the bet that I would make. Because, again, they're obviously telling you that they're invested. They're telling you that they're buying, which should give you a little bit more comfort to buy. If the team is buying, you should feel comfortable about buying because you think the price is going to move in your direction. All right, we will switch gears. NFL, we have a lot to get to in the NFL. We've only got 2 segments left to do it. Stay with us here on VSiN. A numbers game continues after this.
The Sports Betting Network.
All right, we're back. Jared Smith in for Gil all week. Kelly's here, too. Let's just go right into it, Kelly, because I think the player props markets in the NFL, as we have about 30 minutes left in the show, I want to try to hit on as much of the NFL as we can all week long. Because we have guys, the preseason starts this week. You want to say the Hall of Fame game doesn't count? Sure, whatever. I don't care. There's preseason football on this week. If you're one of those people that's a procrastinator, the buzzer's about to sound. You better come up with some opinions on these teams really quick. Even if you're not a ratings guy, like I'm not a ratings guy. I know enough people and have enough good resources of people who do ratings better than me that I don't feel the need to do my own ratings because I'm just doing work that's not as quality as other people's and I have access to it.
Yep.
But you just need to know that. Like, you just have to have that plan. You know, it's like the emergency plan on the side of the building. Just have the plan. You know where you're going for your ratings. You know where you're going for your rankings. You know where you're going for this. You know where you're going for that. Have the plan. know what your plan is. For me, it's a slow, gradual build as we get to this point. And we were talking about this a little while ago during one of the breaks, Kelly. I am one of those people that does not go team by team and do an hour, 2 hours worth on every team, listen to all these podcasts. I let the shows that I'm on kind of dictate when I do my work. Usually right around draft time is when the NFL process starts and you formulate these baseline opinions. And I have notes and I have things on each team, but I don't do like one of those deep dives on every individual team to try to find the most value. I let the shows that I do kind of dictate the work that I do. But when I get to this point, if I feel like I am malnourished in a certain area, now this is the week, 2 week process where I will really start to cram. Are you similar with your process? Where are you with your process? And when you get to the futures market, like what's the first market? What's the first kind of thing you do off your checklist?
Yeah, I'm with you with the I don't do necessarily my own power ratings like you're talking about. I do a deep dive into each team. I definitely like I have full notes on each team and everything like that. So that is something that I do. Deep dive on each team, and then I try to cobble together kind of division notes, right? And then you're kind of going from there. But, you know, from betting wise, like there are, you know, like Gil and I both bet the Bengals to win the AFC North when that first opened up. We thought that this was going to be, that number was going to be a little long. We thought it was going to get shorter. So bet that when it first opened up. Probably the next couple bets I made were after the draft, right? And then the bulk are right during this time in the past month or so, as you're kind of doing your own research on the teams and divisions and everything. And then you start making bets. And then I think as you're kind of hinting at, as we kind of start talking through markets, it's great to have these conversations with other people that you respect betting wise, right? Because you end up coming around on a market, or maybe you didn't think about betting something, you know, a certain way, or you just start comparing prices and see stuff that are off and it triggers a bet, which did for me in one of these markets.
And let's get into one of these markets. So what Kelly does is very, very sound. And I have ratings on units. So I enter the season. I don't do point spread ratings. I have people that are way smarter at that than me. I feel like it's a waste of time for me to do. I could do it, but it's a waste of time because there's people who have been doing it for years that I'm friends with, and I'm just going to use their ratings. I'll be very transparent about it. It's a waste of time for me. But what I do heading into the season is I rank each unit. I rank each positional unit, and then I conglomerate that into a team rankings unit. I do double exposure for the quarterback, obviously. But I have like a team power ratings heading into the season. And then as the season goes along, obviously the power ratings will adjust on the point spread wise, and that's where I kind of go along. But there's another adjustment that you have to make before we get into this market, and it's the rule changes. The rule changes matter certain years more than most. This is a year that it's going to matter a lot. And we just got a note from our pal Steve Fezzik. Thank you for watching, Steve. I appreciate the feedback, pal. This is a very good point. Kickoff rule changing this year. Arguably the most impactful rule change we've seen since the PI changes. You know, since the defensive pass interference penalty changes, like all the personal fouls and all the other stuff that they really threw into the game over the last few years. But this is going to impact the game in a different way. It's going to impact the game with field position, because you're going to have a lot more kickoff returns this year than you've had in prior years. You're going to have a lot more success. It's a very unique play, and if it's run right, field position is going to be better, which means scoring will go up. But what it'll also mean is yardage will go down, because if there's not as many yards to gain on average, because you're starting at the 30-35 instead of the 20-25, if your average starting field position is 5-10 yards closer to your goal line, well, then there's less yards to gain.
Mm-hmm.
So scoring up, but yards down. What does that mean? Player prop markets and most rushing yard markets might be impacted this year. What do you think about that?
I can't wait to – I mean, well, yes. Everything you just said is sound, makes sense, is right. But I can't wait to see the different teams and their different
strategies, approaches,
because I'm wondering how many cowards out there in the NFL
cowards
I'll say it right now are not even tinkering around with this at all, Jared, and they're just like, we're gonna boom it out of the back of the end zone every time, and like, who cares, we'll give it up and let them start at the 30. And
yeah, because the touchback's at the 30 this year, but you think, so what you're saying is you think kickoffs can be way more than 30. You think the average position for kickoff is 35-40 yards?
I mean, I think that you want you I mean, they're trying to design
teams will just concede the 30.
They're trying to design this rule, right, so that there are more returns, but you're also not getting those huge collisions of guys running down the field. So, I mean, I think if you are a smart special teams coach and a team that wants to employ this, you're probably trying to get the ball inside the 5-yard line or maybe just inside the end zone and make that kick returner make that decision of whether they want to come out or not. But I think there's going to be too many coaches that will just be fine with booting it out of the back of the end zone and taking the worst field position. But you're right, when we talk about some of these markets, even that is still impacted. 5 yards is still 5 yards.
5 yards is 5 yards. That's the 100%. I can't argue with that. That's 100% factual. No, this is a really good talking point because we don't know. We really don't know which coach is going to have which strategy. Things are changing in the NFL.
Yep.
This is the traditional, and I'm not saying three is not a key number anymore. It is a key number. But it's not as key of a number as it was 10 years ago. It's just not, because teams are going for two more.
Yep.
They're missing a lot of extra points. Like the kicking game is changing. Now the kickoff game is changing. And eventually you move the variables enough. One season might not show it, but five seasons will. We're now, what, 3 or 4 years into this kickoff extra point thing being changed? Or not the kickoff, but the extra point being moved back and the two-point conversion becoming more prevalent. It might be three, it might be four. I forget the exact number.
Why do
of seasons.
I feel like that's longer than me and you were thinking right now?
Maybe it's only been two seasons. I don't know. It's been a couple. It's definitely been at least two years.
No. I'm thinking it might
feels
be
like 100
closer
years ago.
To five. Yeah.
Whatever. It's been a couple years. Now we have a little bit more data to kind of say, well, 3 and 7 are becoming slightly less key than they were back in the 80s and 90s. And it's just the entire game is changing, and now we're going to have this new monkey wrench thrown into the mix. So,
2015.
7 years. No,
seven.
9 years.
Nine, yeah.
Wow, feels like yesterday they moved
really
the
does.
Extra point back. All right, odds to have the most rushing yards this season. The wrong guy. I'm not saying the wrong guy's favorite here, but he's got like one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL. The 49ers, I've got the Niners graded as the 16th offensive line in football. And you want to bet a guy on their team to have the most rush yards? Now, I know he's got the most volume, Christian McCaffrey, of course, being the favorite in this market by a large margin. This is a big gap for a favorite in a market pre-flop. And this is a counting yards market, right? This isn't a subjective market, which I would understand if a guy like McCaffrey would have such a big lead over everyone else because he scored a touchdown in how many straight games last year? But Christian McCaffrey right now, plus 275 in this market. Jonathan Taylor, Saquon Barkley, by the way. Saquon Barkley, we got to change the team icon next to Saquon Barkley there at plus 650. But it's okay because we all have reminisce on him. I'll be honest, I think Breece Hall's alive here at 8-1.
That is the first name I stopped at as well.
Yeah, he's live. I mean, well, let's just talk it out from a perspective of before you begin in the numbers, just from a perspective of need. The Jets need a running game to take the like they need, and they beefed up the O-line in the offseason. I give them a lot of credit for that.
And I do feel like some of the things we're hearing are true, and it's the best way. I think it's the best way for the Jets to approach this if they do. Where you're looking at Aaron Rodgers, hopefully like 25 attempts a game is kind of where he's maxing out at, and you are balancing this out with an effective run game. I think Breece Hall could have a big year. I haven't made any bets, but like I think offensive player of the year, I think most rushing yards. I think all of these are interesting categories for him this year.
I've heard the burst is back. I've got the Jets graded as a top 10 O-line and a top 10 skill position unit. I mean, again, they're deep.
Yeah.
They're deep. They drafted the kid from Wisconsin. They had a deep running back room to begin with. Abaconda, the Pitt kid, looked good last year in limited time with a terrible O-line and a terrible quarterback situation. He looked good. And, of course, the Jets have had a lot of success drafting running backs. Breece Hall is a great example. Second-round pick. He's an interesting one. The other names on that list don't interest me a whole lot. Just because of volume and injury concerns. Saquon does a little bit, but this is a tough market to bet into. We'll continue to talk NFL. Again, the NFL talk will ramp up considerably this week. The preseason is here, folks. We'll wrap up numbers game on another side.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, let's wrap things up here on a Monday. I'll be with you all week. I was thinking about baseball bets for today. There's one bet, and I told you I was going to talk about this earlier in the show. I'll give it to you now. So the Mets-Twins game. So the Mets, this stat might surprise you. Maybe it won't surprise you. The Mets in July have played 24 games. 21 of them have gone nerfy.
Really?
21-3.
I thought you were gonna bring how many games they've won out of those 20.
No, they've been.
How many have they won? 18?
500 team. They're probably like.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they haven't had a great July, if I can recall.
Am I thinking of June being their
June
hot month?
Was their hot okay. month. June was the month that they almost won. Time does fly by. I want to say they're like a 500 team in July. I could be wrong about that. I can tell you in their last 10 games are 6-4, which is about 500. But they played 24 games in the month of July. They've had 21 nerfies. Here's the rub. Here's the catch. They're facing a team today, the Minnesota Twins, that have been one of the hottest Yerfie teams in baseball lately. And they've also been a very hot team against lefties. And they face a lefty today. So the Twins in the month of July have been above 500 to the Yerfie, which is rare. Again, the Nerfie's been the more prevalent side this year, about 54.5% on the full season, which is a lot. Again, this is usually about a coin flip kind of proposition here.
That's 14-9.
So they've been pretty good.
Orioles and Mariners lead your most wins race with 17 right now.
Orioles been really good in July. I think the Orioles, and we talked about this with Mark Borchardt a little bit earlier in the show, I think the Orioles are the best team in the American League. I do. Especially if they go out and get another starter. I think their lineup's better top to bottom. Now, the Yankees did make an addition. I'll give the Yankees credit. I think Jazz Chisholm makes them better. I think he adds versatility. He can play infield. I heard they might try him out at third base.
Yeah.
Which would be really interesting.
Yeah, he was taking grounders there the other day.
Took grounders at third. Obviously, he can play second. He played second with the Marlins. He played center field last night. He looks a little bit – he looks a little uncomfortable, I think, in center field sometimes.
As two South Florida guys, what was your favorite Jazz Chisholm Marlins memory? Which one will you be framing? Classic Marlins. I love to hate on him whenever I can.
Probably one of the times he let off a game with a home run and ruined my Nerfie.
That's probably, yeah.
That happened a few times. I think the Orioles are the best team in the American League. I do. I honestly do. I think they're going to be in the world. If I had to pick a World Series right now, it'd be Phillies and Orioles. But the Mets today face the Twins. And I love the Twins matchup. Simeon Woods Richardson's been unbelievable. 16-1 of the Nerfie this year. Fantastic numbers. Jose Quintana's been very average. 13-7. I'd say that's below average. All of his underlying numbers have been below average. And the Twins just crush lefties. Royce Lewis crushes lefties. He went yard off Skubal in the first inning the other night, ruined a Nerfie for me. I want to get there with the Mets Nerfie today. I think I'm going to, and here's why. This might sound weird. You might grill me for it. It's fine. I've been grilled for worse. When these numbers take a lot of – usually these Nerfies take a lot of money overnight. This one didn't take as much money as the other ones normally do. But when the Mets Nerfie, and I use all so I track every Nerfie price, every closing price at Pinnacle, which is an offshore book that to me is the most efficient of all the books offshore. I think it's a book that even though I don't use it to bet, at least my friends in Canada do, it's a book I think you should look at the odds every night because I think it's pretty helpful to see how the offshore markets move and the difference, the delta between the offshore numbers and the books that we bet onshore. I just think it's a helpful, useful exercise every night. But when the Nerfie at Pinnacle is priced at -120 or higher, the Mets this season, 41-19 of the Nerfie. So what does that tell you? It tells me that when the Mets are supposed to go Nerfie, they go Nerfie. And that's been a helpful gauge for me to bet these numbers. Right now, the Mets Nerfie offshore is about -125. So it's in that range where I think it's bettable tonight. I think you can probably find a -120 here in town. I think that's my one Nerfie bet tonight. There's a couple others that are intriguing. The Cleveland-Detroit one steamed up a lot. You got Bybee and Flaherty. They just played each other last week, and it went Nerfie. Detroit's actually been a quiet, good Yerfie team on the season. But that's the only one that really stood out to me today. And Texas St. Louis is up there too. I don't know if I trust Evaldi. Palante's been actually really good for St. Louis this year. So I'd say that's one that I'm considering too. But Minnesota and New York, the Mets Nerfies, not only in the month of July, but also when the price is 120 or higher offshore, we're seeing like a 65, 70% Nerfie rate when that happens. So I've got this one today priced at around minus 130, so I would definitely lay minus 120 for it. I pray that Jose Quintana can get through the top of the first unscathed against a Twins lineup that's been really hitting lefty strong this year. Anything else for you on the board today that intrigues you?
I'll throw out a couple. Nothing specifically for today, but I just shopped around here in Vegas, and I don't see anybody that has this market up, so I'll bring it up for everybody else out there. Going back to the Olympics basketball, the tournament MVP price, LeBron James is plus 120. He's the short shot. By far the short shot. I don't know what I've seen, though, in the exhibition games and in game one to make me think that LeBron is not going to be the clear-cut choice on Team USA, who is now about a minus 600 favorite to win the gold. I think that's a good bet.
I agree.
I don't think there's any reason why his role within this team is going to change at all. He is classic LeBron, offensively doing everything, getting kind of close to a triple-double yesterday. So, I like that price. I can't find anybody in town in Vegas that has it, so I'll throw that out there real quick. And one we didn't get to last segment, I did make a bet in the season-long most interceptions.
Wow.
Yeah, we didn't get to that last segment. We can talk about it here
right
for the
now.
Last few minutes. This is one of my favorite markets to bet every single year. I always think fewest wins, most interceptions.
It's easier to pick the bad teams than the good ones.
That's right. So we've got these up, and this was the ultimate, and tip of the cap to Dustin Sweetelson, because there was a name that jumped out here to me. And then I realized there was a book in town that was hanging over double the price that we were seeing at Drafty. So you got Josh Allen, Jaden Daniels, 8-1, the short shots in this market. Then Caleb Williams, Will Levis, 10-1, Derek Carr and Bo Nix, Baker Mayfield, Trevor Lawrence, all 12-1, everybody else 20-1 or longer. I think there's a lot of good candidates. We know Josh Allen is very turnover prone. I think every year with this market, Jared, I always like to look at, okay, what rookie quarterbacks do we expect to struggle but have been drafted high enough that they're not going to get benched at any point, right?
Caleb.
I think it makes Caleb Williams live. He is not who I bet. I think it makes him live. What's the offense we've been hearing about this offseason that's going to air it out way more and put their second-year quarterback in a position to throw the ball all over the place with his strong arm? That is the Tennessee Titans. And old Billy Levi's, my old friend Billy Levi's.
Billy Levi's.
10-1 at DraftKings, 23-1 here at Circa to lead the league in interceptions. So that was a bet for me yesterday.
They just got rid of Derrick Henry, so not as much of a volume rushing team.
And the wide receivers that they've added, I think you are going to see the Tennessee Titans airing it out.
And their offensive line stinks.
Yes, I think we're going to see them airing it out a ton this year.
I like that.
And I like Levis. I don't really know if he's going to end up being a quality NFL quarterback or not, but oh boy, the test is going to be put to him this season, and I think there could be a lot of interceptions coming the Will Levis.
He did enough last year to be given a long leash.
Yes.
And that is, you're right.
He's got a cannon, too.
You're
got
handicapping the leash, frankly, because you might think these other guys, and that's why.
Second-year guy, you got to figure out what you have, Jared. You're not benching him.
Yeah, that's why I wouldn't bet Bo Nix, because if he throws a bunch of picks, you've got Zach Wilson and Jarrett Stidham back there. In fact, Jarrett Stidham, Dustin made a good case why you should bet Jarrett Stidham take the first snap.
Yeah. Yeah, he did that yesterday as well.
Recycling old takes, Dustin. Jeez.
I think there are guys, like, I wouldn't bet Jaden Daniels, right, because of injury risk a little bit. I do think, I mean, he's a slightly framed guy. He's going to run the ball.
Like, when he panics, he'll run it, whereas Levis will throw it.
Yeah, and because I think he is a little bit, because of that slighter frame, a guy you don't want to worry about getting hurt. If for whatever reason, the season falls apart for Washington, I could see him ending up on the bench at the end of the year just to protect him from getting hurt, right? So some of those, but like Caleb Williams, if you want to tell me you're betting Caleb Williams, I don't think that's a bad bet here either. I mean, it's a team that everybody's expecting to be at least around 500 in that playoff hunt. So even from that perspective, it's not like the season's going to be done at any point. You know, at least odds makers think so. I don't think they're going to be all that great. But Caleb, they're going to let Caleb Williams get all the reps that he can this year, no matter how the season's going. So at least by season two, he's really ready to go.
Yeah, there's a lot of intriguing NFL futures markets. I will do my best this week to gather up, round up some of the ones that I really want to talk about. Because this is, guys, again, once we start getting weekly updates, camp, preseason, you're in the grind. You're in, like, it's the X-Wing going into the gauntlet, getting ready to kill the Death Star. Like we're here. The season's right in front of us. Great stuff all around. Appreciate it. All of our guests, Kelly, everyone in the back. I'll be back tomorrow on a numbers game here on VSiN.